Wolves Cast, audio on demand.
Welcome into another episode of Wolves Cast Audio on Demand. John Folkey alongside Cal Soderquist here on the Timberwolves Radio Network. Coming up on this episode, we'll sit down with Wolves head coach Tom Thibodeau. We'll talk about the season to this point, some of the positives, some of the areas that he's looking to improve upon, and we'll talk about Taj Gibson, among others. So that's coming up in our middle segment. And then we'll go three in the key, the top three storylines this week in the NBA. That'll be a fun segment as we give our first kind of look at the MVP race up to this point in the season. Let's start, though, Cal, with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Two-game winning streak came to an end on Tuesday. A game that was originally slated for a 7-10 tip got flexed onto the ESPN second end of a doubleheader. So that tip time got moved back to 8:40. Welcoming in the Philadelphia 76ers, Joel Embiid makes his return to the lineup after missing two games. And I got to tell you, we were treated to a fun game. I mean, when you think about the talent that was on the floor last night and the unique talent of Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, the 6'10 Ben Simmons, who, well, he didn't have a huge game statistically, still it was our first chance to see him up close and personal and kind of see his court vision and his, you know, him in person as a floor general. But it was a fun game. Obviously, it didn't end up the way Minnesota wanted, but you're talking about kind of the future of a couple of different positions there, not just the big man, but also the big man and point guard as well.
Yeah, worth the wait, I think, right, for the fans who stayed up late. And as you mentioned, there were some unicorns out there in terms of the size and skill set combos. And you mentioned Ben Simmons, not a huge night statistically, but if you watched, whether you were here at Target Center or watching on TV, you can see the talent that guy has. It's pretty impressive that, you know, guys come into this league with that court vision, and it's tough to teach what some of these guys have as passers. You know, whether it's LeBron James, I think, is the gold standard, and then Ben Simmons looked pretty good last night too. Some of those, you know, alley-oops from just inside half court, just being able to put the ball right where one of his big men needs it to just catch it and lay it in.
And so quickly, just like a flick of the wrist.
It's fast break. It's a very unique and beneficial fast break for the team. We saw him do it a couple times, and then he was able to flip the switch to score mode a little bit in fourth quarter and overtime. So he's a basketball player. He and Joel Embiid were a ton of fun. We saw Dario Saric knock down a couple big triples as well. That's a Sixer team that, you know, I said it earlier to someone that the overtime loss stings for the Wolves, but I think that's a team that a year from now, 2 years from now, you'll look at a lot of those same players, that same core will be intact, and you'll say a lot of teams are going to suffer losses either in overtime or regulation.
Ben Simmons, 7 points. They all came in the fourth quarter in overtime. 8 assists. Did have 7 turnovers, but Brett Brown brought this up, and I thought it was a great point. Simmons finished up a +3. So even though he wasn't scoring, and give Jimmy Butler a lot of credit for the defense that he played against Simmons, he still found ways to impact the game and finish up a +3. And then Embiid, 28 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. He had the game-tying free throws, which helped send the game into overtime. But to see a guy at his size go out there and do some of those things. I mean, we see it all the time with Karl Anthony Towns, and you kind of scratch your head and say, how is this guy that big, and how is he able to do these things? But then you see Joel Embiid, and Embiid is even bigger than Towns, and as fleet of foot as Towns, and, you know, so light on his toes and all those different things, and you're sitting there looking at it saying, didn't they write an article like many, many times over about the death of the big man? And as I was saying to somebody this morning,
the resurrection now.
Well, the evolution.
Yeah.
It's not just back to the basket. It's, you know, what Towns is doing, or what Embiid is doing, what Kristaps Porzingis is doing, Miles Turner. I mean, on down the line, these guys have redefined what we think of as a 7-footer. And obviously, you've got to give the credit originally to Dirk Nowitzki for kind of opening people's minds to what's possible out of a 7-footer. But these guys have taken it and ran with it. And it's just incredible to think where we are now from when Dirk broke in, you know, 20 years ago to where we are now. Think of what these guys are laying the foundation for, and what a big man will look like 20 years from now when Towns and Embiid are wrapping up their careers. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to think about where we could go in terms of how these guys are developing all these different skills. So fun to watch all those players and all that talent out on the floor. Now, you mentioned that the overtime loss stings, and I think why it stings is that with 5:27 left, Jeff Teague put Minnesota up 88-80. Philadelphia, who had started the quarter 0-6 shooting there in the final frame, they then shot 10 of 13, that's 77%, over the final 5:27 and overtime. They also went 15 of 18 from the free throw line. Meanwhile, Minnesota during that stretch, 9 of 23, that's 39% shooting, and just 2 of 4 at the free throw line. And what's interesting, and Tibbs brought it up after the game, we'll hear from him in a moment, is Minnesota is so good at defending without fouling. They don't put their opponents at the free throw line. And here, during a 10.5-minute stretch at the end of regulation and through overtime, Philly got to the free throw line 18 different times. Let's hear from Wolves head coach Tom Thibodeau.
The reason why I say I want to take a look at the fouls is, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, we have been very good at, you know, in terms of we don't foul. And so I just want to see it. I thought it was there was a lot of marginal, you know, contact. You know, sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't.
So, Cal, we'll hear from Tibbs tomorrow after shoot-around. The Wolves have the day off today, but it is interesting, and maybe it was just a case of Philadelphia being super aggressive in that. When they found themselves down by 8, you know, they kind of played with reckless abandon and were able to draw some fouls and get to the free throw line. But kind of shocking to see, you know, a 14 free throw differential between Philadelphia during that stretch and Minnesota.
Yeah, it could be a combination of things, too. Like you said, it could be some here or there calls. It could be the Wolves with some tired legs and not in their defensive rotations like they should be. Or it could just be aggressiveness from the Sixers, maybe not getting the shots that they wanted to fall and really making it a point of emphasis. I just think to that specific possession where Embiid got so low into the post to establish that position on Cat, to be able to catch and then just basically turn and either force Cat into a foul or he may have slammed it from there, who knows. But they did a great job of getting the ball where they needed it and really forcing their way to the free throw line and kind of forcing the refs to make those calls. And it was a sort of a veteran move from a very young team.
You know, and interesting, too, that when you go back and look at that play, Embiid, as you mentioned, he got such deep post position, did his work early. It reminded me a lot of a couple years back during Cat's rookie season out at Portland when Cat got the game-winning jump hook there on the right block, and he did the same thing. I mean, he came in and just buried his defender down under the basket, created an opening to get that pass in, and gave himself a good look. And Embiid did that on Towns, and afterwards, Carl, very distraught about Philadelphia going at him and him not being able to stop them in that possession.
I'm more frustrated that with 20 seconds left, they threw the ball to Joel Embiid, and I didn't make the stop that I needed to make. So, you know, my teammates, you know, trust me with the assignment, and I failed them. So, you know, that's, you know, that hurts.
So, Cal, we heard from Karl Anthony Towns right there, you know, wanting to make that play, and you can hear it in his voice, you know, upset that he wasn't able to make that play. And you feel for Cat because this has been a tough season in terms of, you know, how people are viewing his defense and talking about his defense. And, you know, I thought overall Cat played a pretty solid game. I mean, finishing up with 19 points.
Some big blocks.
Yeah, some big blocks. We talked about it during the game last night here in the studio, how active he was on the glass. And Philadelphia came in number one rebounding team in the league. I think defensively there were some areas that certainly stood out in that you could see guys, you know, beating him down the floor as some of those Simmons lobs that you talked about. And, you know, whether that was on Carl or not, you know, so or whether it was somebody else to pick him up or whatever, you could see him late in closing on those. And then when Simmons got free along the baseline, again, I don't know whether or not that was Carl, but Carl was there and couldn't make the stop. And so you know how much pride these guys take in what they do out there on the floor. And you could hear it in Cat's voice, upset. And, you know, maybe this is one of those things where it finally, you know, clicks for everybody. Something that Jimmy and Coach Tibbs talk about all the time about how hard you have to compete every single possession on the defensive end. And maybe this is one of those moments where all of a sudden you hit that realization and you can build from this and build those habits and it kind of clicks for everybody.
And you know, to Cat, I mean, he is a competitor and that's how he's wired and he takes it really hard. But I don't know how much he could have done on that possession. Like, it's hard to slow Joel Embiid down from getting to where he wants to go if he makes his mind up. And the other thing, too, Jimmy Butler pointed it out in the post game that it's not on just one guy. Everyone, mm-hmm. It's not on one play either. I mean, there were other plays earlier in the game that the team maybe could have made to where it doesn't come down to that final possession, just Cat versus just Embiid. So it's the right attitude to have, in the sense that it's going to probably motivate Cat to continue to work harder and get better. But it's not on just one guy, and I think everyone on the team knows that they have to just continue to make those strides as a unit.
And we heard Butler say it about five times last night. We need to get everybody on the same page.
Yep.
It's not just one guy. It's team defense. For Carl, it was his first career game with three steals and three blocks, and he played a career high in minutes, over 48 last night. For Carl Anthony Towns. All right, that'll do it for segment one here. We'll take a quick timeout. Still to come, we'll go three in the key, the top three storylines around the NBA this week. But coming up next, we check in with Wolves head coach and president of basketball operations, Tom Thibodeau, right here on Wolvescast Audio on Demand on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Wolves fans, give the gift of the Wolves this season with a Timberwolves Holiday Pack. Enjoy five great games against the Lakers, Cavs, Raptors, Rockets, and Bulls. Plus, get a free Timberwolves hat from New Era. There's no better gift to give yourself or someone on your gift list. Visit Timberwolves.com/holiday to purchase your pack today. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back. Wolvescast Audio on Demand. John Fokey with you here. Coming up, Cal Soderquist will rejoin me as we go three in the key. Take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA, including the beginning of our MVP conversation. But before we get to that, we're nearly 30 games into this season. Thought it would be a good time to check in with Wolves head coach and president of basketball operations, Tom Thibodeau. Coach, here we are a couple of months into the season. I know earlier you said that 20 games in, you kind of start to get a feel for the team, but with all the different pieces that you added this year and the travel and everything, would you look at this in terms of identity as still kind of a work in progress?
Yeah, well, I think we're still learning a lot about our team and each other, and so we have to continue to work at it. And obviously the moving parts, guys being in and out of the lineup, but the important thing for us is to continue to improve each and every day.
How important to focus in on that during this homestand, whether it's practice, shoot-around, or the games?
No, I think it's huge. I think being home for an extended period like this is good, because it allows us to practice and work on some of the things that we need to work on. And sometimes you can be distracted when you're home for an extended amount of time, but I think our guys are looking forward to this challenge and have done a good job thus far.
One of the things we've noticed about this team is the ability to win close games, and whether it's the margin of 6 points or clutch time games. What have you noticed in terms of the difference this time around than last year, when that maybe was a struggle?
Well, I think Andrew and Carl are a year older, but of course the addition of Jimmy has been huge for our team and the impact that he's had. And then you could also add in a guy like Taj, who has the best net rating on our team. Per 48 minutes, and then you add in Jeff as well. He's been in a lot of tight situations, so I think that's a big plus, and of course Jamal as well.
You brought up Taj and that plus-minus rating, highest on the team. We, as Wolves fans, didn't get a chance to watch him maybe as closely since he was in the Eastern Conference, but when you watch him now, the little things he does, the positioning, the defense, finding the soft spots, I mean, is that kind of what drew you to him when you first
Well,
there
I
in
think
Chicago?
I had a good feel for him because of our time together in Chicago, but he finished a lot of games in Chicago. He really was a starter. And maybe people probably didn't realize that, but I knew how important he was, and he had been in a number of big games in tight situations. And he's one of those guys that he just makes everyone around him a lot better. Adds a real toughness to our team.
What does he bring in the locker room as well?
The veteran experience and just doing the right things each and every day. He's a great teammate. He'll do whatever you ask him to do. So when he was in Chicago, we asked him to come off the bench, and he was great at that. Here we're asking him to start. He's been great with that as well.
This team's been very good on the offensive glass. Top three in second chance points, top five in offensive rebound percentage. How do you balance that with the improvements that you've made in transition defense, so that you're still able to excel at hitting the glass, but also at getting back and stopping teams?
Yeah, I think the challenge is for us to be a complete team and to be strong on both sides of the ball. So offensively, we've been very pleased with where we are. I think we have the fifth ranked offense in the league, and the offensive rebounding and getting to the free throw line and keeping our turnovers down, those are probably three of the strongest things that we do. And then
To your point about the offensive rebounding, it's important for us to have floor balance when the ball is shot. So we're, you know, we want our bigs going to the board. We want our smalls to get back. We're also asking our bigs, if they're above the free throw line, for them to get back as well. So we know the defensive transition is something that we have to continue to work on to try to improve.
You guys have done a good job taking care of the basketball, but then there's that statistical anomaly of you're 11-2 when you turn the ball over 15 or more times. Is that just one of those those weird things this year?
Yeah. You know, and you want to be aggressive, and sometimes, you know, there could be as we would say, a good turnover, whether that be an aggressiveness and going to the offensive board, and maybe where you might be called for a 3-second call. But, for the most part, I think it's important to understand how important it is to be a low turnover team. And a big part of winning is eliminating all the ways in which you beat yourself first. And that, we always say, it's the turnovers and the fouling. And we're very good at being disciplined, at playing without fouling and also taking care of the ball. So I think that helps you. It helps you to win close games.
How important, looking towards close games, postseason, that kind of thing, is your ability to get to the free throw line, but also keep the opponents off the free throw line, just in terms of half-court games, grind out end-of-game situations?
I think, when you look at points per possession, the free throw is worth the most. So I think that's critical. But the added benefit to that is it allows you to set your defense. We try to emphasize that. We want to get to the bonus as quickly as we can and try to take advantage of that.
First season around affiliated with the Iowa Wolves, how has that partnership gone so far? Yeah. You've got Justin Patton down there. We've seen Anthony Brown come up, Marcus Georges Hunt play a game with them as well.
Yeah, no, we were very excited to get the team, and it's been great for us. So we'll continue to use it. And obviously you see the benefit for Justin, a guy who had an injury, missed training camp, missed the summer. So this is really his training camp is right now. So he'll probably be down there for about a month or so. And it allows him to get quality playing time. And as much as you try to get practice to the intensity level of a game, you can't. But down there, he does have the opportunity to practice and play. So I think it's been great for him. The two-way players, that's been great for them as well. And then you could also use it if you have a veteran that gets hurt. And I think you're seeing that now around the league, where the veterans are going down and practicing with the G League team. And then, it allows them to get quality work in before you bring them back to play.
Finally, Coach, coming out of this homestand, you've got 7 out of 9 on the road, really busy stretch into January. What do you hope your team can take from this stretch into the second half of the season there, heading towards the All-Star break?
And we don't like to look ahead. For us, it's build the right habits, concentrate on exactly what's in front of us. So take it game by game, but the improvement part is the most important thing. So you want to build the right habits so you're playing your best basketball at the end of the season. So each day, come in, have the right attitude, right approach, put everything you have into it, and have great concentration. If we're all doing the right things, the good things will happen for the team.
All right, certainly appreciate head coach Tom Thibodeau taking some time to join the podcast. Keep it right here. Cal Soderquist rejoins me after the break. We go 3 in the key on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
The Timberwolves are back, and so is College Night, presented by U.S. Bank. For select home games, college students can get upper-level tickets for $10 with a valid college ID on game day or by using a valid .edu email address online. Visit Timberwolves.com/College Night for more information. Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back. Wolvescast, audio on demand. John Folke, Cal Soderquist, wrapping things up here as we go 3 in the key, our top 3 storylines this week in the NBA. Cal, let's start with, what's up with Oklahoma City? You've got some of the best offensive talent in the league on that team, and Carmelo Anthony, one of the best, one-on-one scorers in the game. You've got Paul George, who can score from the wing in a variety of different ways. You got Russell Westbrook, who can do a little bit of everything, score, assist, rebound. I mean, set a record for triple-doubles last season, and yet Oklahoma City, 24th in offensive rating. Now, what's even more mind-boggling is that they're second in defensive rating. At the beginning of the year, if you said, hey, we're going to move Carmelo Anthony onto this team and they're going to get markedly better defensively, you'd have said, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Kind of like what we talked about a couple weeks ago with Kyrie going to Boston, and they've become better. So kind of a head-scratcher in Oklahoma City in that their offense is struggling, their defense is good, but they can't close games out, just 5-10 in clutch games, and they're kicking off a 3-game road trip tonight at Indy, at Philly, and at New York, which some are saying is kind of a season-defining road trip for them. We're early in the season, but there are some things trending here for Oklahoma City that, you know, not being able to close out games, struggling offensively, that kind of make you wonder if they're going to be able to figure things out or they're going to be one of those teams that falls in that hole early and can't climb back into the playoff picture.
Yeah, too little, too late scenario potentially. You mentioned those closing out games, and I wonder if that's one of those deals where you're still establishing a hierarchy, and obviously Russell Westbrook is a ball-dominant scorer. He's one of the very best in the game, but those other guys probably need the ball a little bit too in those late-game scenarios, and we've heard Tom Thibodeau mention it, making the right play. Mm-hmm. If the defenders are focusing on someone, you've got to, you know, be able to trust in your teammates. And we've talked about how there's still time for these guys to work it out, and there's going to be a transition period, but the clock is ticking. And what makes it even more interesting is that you wanted these guys to have success and kind of build harmony early with the situation surrounding Paul George and what decisions he might have to make in the offseason here this summer. Obviously, Russell Westbrook is committed there long-term, but there's a lot of question marks beyond this season with the rest of that roster. And, oh, by the way, that game at Indy tonight should be a lot of fun because all of a sudden, Victor Oladipo is having a resurgence.
He's been incredible. 47 points the other night. What he's done, I know Pat Boylan, who is their radio studio host for the Indiana Pacers, had a stat the other day that already this season through whatever it is, 27 games to this point for Indiana, they have had more, or they have equaled the number of 17-point comebacks that they had all of last season. And so if they fall behind, they find a way to come back, and they come in riding a four-game winning streak and 7-3 in their last 10, feeling pretty confident. So it'll be a lot of fun here tonight to watch Paul George make his return to Indiana. I think the good thing for Oklahoma City, in the sense that, you know, they're struggling, they're trying to find their way, they're only a half game out of the playoff picture. Yeah. Now, if they were like Memphis and you find yourself five games out and, you know, still struggling and trying to work your way back, you know, and having to leapfrog a bunch of teams, that could be way more challenging. But where OKC is, just a half game back, nobody to leapfrog, you're in a decent position while you try to figure things out. But you don't want to keep hanging outside the playoff picture. You want to be able to figure things out and move forward. And I just wonder, too, if, you know, as you traded guys to bring in Carmelo Anthony, to bring in Paul George, if, you know, you traded away some of your your assets and your role players that complemented Russell Westbrook, that could complement this roster.
Or some of your future, too.
Yeah, that's very true.
And we've mentioned before that, you know, trades sometimes are the reason guys blossom. It's not like someone was always going to have that same next year on that current roster that he was traded from. Yeah. So it's always tough to speculate. But yeah, if you look, if Victor Oladipo would have been a great piece to keep around with Russell Westbrook, and it just makes it so much more intriguing moving forward if they continue to struggle, OKC that is, because of all the surrounding implications.
Well, and it's a reunion tour right now. We talked about Paul George going back to Indiana. This road trip will also feature Carmelo Anthony returning to the Garden, and a fun matchup on Friday against Philadelphia. Both tonight and Friday are nationally televised games on ESPN for the Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, topic number two here on Three in the Key. History nightly in the NBA. We kind of talked about the unicorns that were on the floor Tuesday as the Wolves took on the Philadelphia 76ers. Prior to that game, Kristaps Porzingis making a little history for the New York Knicks. Came the first player in NBA history to have at least 35 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, and 5 made three-pointers in a game. And again, folks, he's 7 feet tall or 7 feet three, whatever he is. He keeps growing. LeBron James last night as well. First player to make at least 10 shots, shoot better than 80% from the field, and record at least 15 assists in a game since John Stockton did it for the Jazz against the Rockets back in 1996. It is mind-boggling what we're seeing out of players night in and night out. And it's not just the bigs. It's James Harden and what he's doing. It's teams rewriting the three-point shooting. You know, Joel Embiid a couple of weeks ago against the Lakers, first time since Dr. J to put up, you know, 46 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists, 7 blocks. I mean, Cal, are we in kind of the golden age right now of versatility, for lack of a better word? I mean, I don't know that we say this is a golden age of the NBA. I think it's too early to say that, but just in terms of versatility and kind of what guys are capable of that we never thought they would be.
The possibilities, I think. And you mentioned that LeBron James stat, the fact that he's the first guy to do it since 1996. James Harden might do that later this year. I mean, can you see James Harden with 15 assists? And if he has an efficient night shooting, he shoots it maybe a little more, so 80% would be tough. But he might do that. That we could see that twice in the same season. And I just think, you know, you talk about whether or not it's the golden age, and no matter what, the game is in great hands with some of these young players. You know, we said goodbye to Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant recently, and LeBron James only has so many more years or so much more time at this level he's at right now, and it's going to be just fine with guys like Kristaps Porzingis and Giannis Antetokounmpo and even the guys we saw last night on the floor at Target Center. So it's really exciting, and it's such a great time to be a fan, even just of the league. If whether or not your team's playing well, to be able to turn on a nationally televised game or pull up League Pass and just watch so many talented guys share the floor night in and night out.
I keep thinking back to, you know, what the NBA looked like when I was growing up watching it and wondering, like, could you imagine, you know, if Tim Duncan was leading a break and just stopping and popping on a three, or Shaq, you know, is posted out in the corner as, you know, Eddie Jones drives in and kicks it to him in the corner, and you've got Shaq jacking up a three. And, you know, that's what it's becoming. I mean, obviously, Shaq was rewriting things in his own way with what he did, but with the way the game has evolved and seeing these guys embrace that and seeing coaches too. I mean, it's up to the coaches to open their minds to what is possible. And, you know, I mean, Mike D'Antoni's kind of been described as, you know, the mad scientist out there saying, like, hey, let's throw out the rule book. What can we do? You know, how can we maximize efficiency and all those things? It is just fun to watch. And I think you're right. I think golden age of possibility, that is a great term to use. So that's what we will coin this era of NBA basketball. We'll wrap up our three in the key with our final topic, and we haven't really done this. We kind of danced around it a little bit, but now that we're nearing the 30-game mark here in the season, time to start thinking about the MVP conversation. And I think this is an interesting year in the NBA because some of the guys that you're used to being in that conversation have kind of slipped out. You know, Russell Westbrook from a year ago, he's putting up good numbers, but as we talked about, OKC is struggling. So your top three MVP candidates or guys that you would start the conversation with, why don't you go first?
Well, we're probably going to share one, but I think James Harden is impossible to ignore. I think we mentioned Mike D'Antoni and just what they've achieved with that offense, and it wouldn't be possible without that marriage of D'Antoni and James Harden, and it's been incredible to watch, and so many of the numbers support Harden being right in that mix. And then my other two, in either order for these two guys, but Steph Curry, right before he got hurt a week ago and was going to miss, he's going to miss about 2 weeks or so, but he was having an incredible season as well, and even sharing the floor with his teammates. His efficiency numbers were incredible, and for the same reason, I think Giannis Antetokounmpo at least deserves a mention for some of the things he's doing in terms of carrying the Milwaukee Bucks and filling up all those advanced statistical categories. So those are kind of my three, and like you said, we're still a third of the way into the year, and I think someone will rise above the rest of these guys. Maybe it's a matter of, you know, wins still count for something in the MVP race too, so I think that could be a factor, but those are kind of the three guys that jump out to me. I also think LeBron could be a candidate every year.
True.
But those are kind of my three if I had to pick three at this third of the way through.
Well, as I looked at it, wins did play a factor in my mind. You've got the Houston Rockets, who have won 10 straight games, 21-4 on the season. James Harden, I think, is my front runner. 32 points. He's hitting 41% from beyond the arc, 5 rebounds, 9.5 assists. He's number one in scoring, second in assists. He's been able to find a way to share the floor with Chris Paul, and their offense hasn't suffered. There has been no, you know, kind of breaking in period or anything like that. Those guys have hit the ground running once Paul came back from injury. So right now I'd give an edge to James Harden. And then I think LeBron James and what he's been able to do in Cleveland, you know, as he's gotten older, he's gotten more efficient. He's added that three-point shot. Cavs are 20-8. I think they've won 15 of their last 16. He comes in averaging 28 points, career-high 42% from beyond the arc, 7 rebounds, 8 assists. He's third in scoring and third in assists. And you think about the injuries and everything that Cleveland has gone through, and yet there they are after a slow start, you know, nipping at the heels of the Boston Celtics in terms of the Eastern Conference standings. And then kind of a toss-up at number three, and you talked about Steph Curry for Golden State. I would give it to Kevin Durant, personally. I think just because of the impact that he has on the defensive end. I mean, Durant's scoring, he's rebounding, you know, he's assisting, but he's also top five in blocks.
That's insane.
Absolutely. He's averaging a career high in blocks. So he's impacting the game in all those different areas, and obviously Golden State is playing very well, and they've dealt with some injuries early on themselves. And then Kyrie Irving, for what he's done for Boston, the numbers that he's put up, obviously the 16-game winning streak the Celtics had, but also what I thought was interesting, he sat out against the Chicago Bulls earlier this week, and the Bulls, who have just struggled all year, absolutely trounced Boston. So sometimes there is, you know, subtraction by subtraction, if if you will, in the MVP conversation. So you look at that and say, maybe Boston really does need Kyrie. Maybe he is that important, even if his numbers aren't, you know, as gaudy as James Harden, LeBron, or some of those other guys. So fun to begin the conversation. I do like where you went, though, with, you know, the versatility, again, of Giannis. Kind of a guy that, you know, Milwaukee's not the sexy pick of the Eastern Conference, but what Giannis has been able to do again, you know, based off the steps that he took last year, rising his game again this year and putting Milwaukee in the conversation to be an interesting team and a team that you probably don't want to face in the East, especially now that they've gotten Eric Bledsoe and they've been able to start rolling. So I think he's a guy certainly that you want to put on MVP watch and keep an eye on.
That's the fun thing about those, some of these advanced metrics, the usage rating and the player efficiency ratings, the plus minuses for a single player. It kind of helps you paint a picture of, like, if when Kyrie misses a game, what does that player mean to his team? If he were to miss a stretch of games or a week or 2 weeks, how many different ways is he impacting things for his team? So that's why Giannis at least deserves the nod.
Absolutely. Well, that is our MVP conversation. It's something we'll check in on a couple more times throughout this season just to see where these guys are at, who has risen into the conversation, and we'll keep that conversation going. That's going to do it for this episode of WolvesCast Audio on Demand. For Cal Soderquist, I'm John Fogey. Be sure to check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and, of course, Timberwolves.com. We'll talk to you again next week right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.